On Reddit, true crime doesn't come from journalists. It comes from the victims, the witnesses, and sometimes the suspects themselves.
Every Tuesday on Crimes of Reddit, we read these posts out loud.
I'm Sabrina Dianaroga.
And I'm Alexis Linkletter. One of us brings the story, the other goes in blind, reacting in real time, just like you.
New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Crimes of Reddit, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? Maintain X is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With Maintain X, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try Maintain X for free today. Go to maintainx.com/AI. That's maintainx.com/AI.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to a Weird News Roundup presented by Odyssey's Something Offbeat Podcast. We explore strange tales reported on by Odyssey's radio newsrooms from coast to coast. I'm your Roundup host, Lauren Berry. We're heading into this week's stories in a Ferrari that sold for $40 million. From there, we're headed to a legendary literary destination you might not know about in Mississippi. Then, we'll hear all about Nimrods, a new movie that takes viewers on an offbeat journey into the music of Green Day. And to end the show, we've got angry beavers and angry bears on the loose. To get things going, here's Mike DeBusky on a new morning out of Odyssey station WBEN in Buffalo. He's got the details on a Ferrari that sold for $40 million at a charity auction.
$40 million, which was way more than anyone was expecting, even given that this was a charity auction at a pretty ritzy car event. This is R.M. Sotheby's auction in Monterey, California, which took place this weekend. Usually charity auctions, we see, you know, a lot of excitement, bidding and that sort of thing. It does sort of inflate the value, especially of cars. This is also Car Week in Monterey, California, which is this big kind of special event for car collectors to bring out their rarest and most special stuff. Manufacturers like Ferrari get in on the fun as well. And Ferrari did bring the first chassis, basically the first production version of the Luce, which is their all-electric car, to this event. It is like the first one off the production line. So all of those factors did sort of like culminate to get people expecting someone, a bidder, a wealthy person, to pay up between $1 and $2 million for this thing. But 40 is way more than really anybody was expecting. And it's especially eye-opening when you consider that the Luce, which is Ferrari's first all-electric car, it's a five-seat crossover, drew a lot of criticism when it debuted earlier this year. You and I talked about this, Susan, I believe, in May. This car was not a hit on launch. People did not like the way it looked. It's styled by Johnny Ive, who is the guy who designed the iPhone and a number of iconic Apple products, taking his talents to the automotive sector, and it was not a surefire hit. People also criticizing the idea of an electric Ferrari. Ferrari, obviously, really high-end Italian sports car brand, known for that sort of sonorous engine note. Again, it's an all-electric car, so it doesn't really make that noise. But even still, $40 million was the price tag for this particular version of the Luce. Admittedly, a very special version of this car, given that it was kind of the first one. They call it the tailor-made one, so it's got like some special features on it. But a really, really big number for this pretty controversial car.
Oh, it really is. I just wonder now, could this particular charity, could this turn the tide for Ferrari and maybe increase demand for it?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, right? So there's a couple different things to consider when we're talking about this particular auction. The proceeds of it went to the Ferrari Foundation. This was a charity auction. So that also maybe contributed a little bit to the bidding here. Ferrari Foundation is focused on education efforts around the world. For example, they're rebuilding a school that was damaged by wildfires in Southern California. So that's a piece of this. It is also a charity. So it's, you get a little bit of a tax, you know, benefit from that part of it. So there's maybe that, you know, factor to consider that maybe overinflating the value of this vehicle a little bit. There's also the way Ferrari does business. So Ferrari makes, a lineup of vehicles like any other car maker does, but they also do like really special cars that they only do like, you know, a couple hundred examples of. And in order to get an allocation for those cars, well, you have to be like a repeat Ferrari customer. You have to buy, you know, quote unquote, more pedestrian versions of their cars in order to get access to the really special stuff. Ferrari says they're not doing that with the Luce. It's just a normal car for them. But even still, you can imagine that, you know, consumers, Ferrari enthusiasts and things like that maybe have their eye on that when they're thinking about, you know, shelling out for, you know, a sort of unusual car like this. However, the other way to think about this is that Ferrari says that Luces are basically sold out for the rest of the year. They had a production run planned for 2026 models, and they are all accounted for. They say that there is huge demand for this vehicle in China. Again, pretty interesting, given that, you know, this was not a hit, at least it seemed, when it first was unveiled. Even the previous CEO of Ferrari, Luca di Montezemolo, said that this was basically a mark on Ferrari's brand, that this was the wrong direction for that car company. Seems like in some of the sales numbers, it's working out for them. But there are those kind of other considerations to factor in. We're just going to have to wait and see as production actually ramps up for this thing. This is like literally the first car off the assembly line. Once these things kind of become a little bit more, you know, mass produced as the years go on, I think that's going to give us a little bit better of an idea into exactly how much demand there is for something like a 5-seat all-electric Ferrari.
The Recap Show is an inside look for fans into the world of global soccer, women's sports, and all things gal culture.
From the inside perspective of two World Cup champions and Olympians.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
When I think about literary history in the U.S., I think of New York City or the City Lights bookstore in San Francisco. Even the Long Island Sound, where one could look out and think about how we all beat on, like boats against the current, borne back ceaselessly into the past. As F. Scott Fitzgerald put it in The Great Gatsby, often considered the great American novel. However, there's another place, tucked away in Mississippi, that is home to a treasure trove of American literary history. Kelly and Bob Phillips of Own the Road with Kelly and Bob out of Odyssey Station KRLD 1080 in Dallas visited this spot for their America 250 tour. Let's listen in to just a bit of their journey.
Pretty much for the entire time that has elapsed since our forefathers signed the Declaration of Independence until today, people in our country have been attempting to write the great American novel.
And the guy you're about to meet says maybe, just maybe, it's already been written. Only time will tell.
One thing for sure, though, many of those authors who would be on the list of those that presumably might write such a book have passed through a particular place in Oxford, Mississippi.
I was born in Marks, Mississippi, which is about 50 miles from here, and which some people will know and a few recall that it was where the Poor People's March started in 1968. King and the organizers wanted to start it there because Quitman County, where Marks is, was then and probably still is to some extent the poorest per capita county in the nation. That's why they started Poor People's March there. My father went there as a doctor when he got out of the Navy And it was close to here, for one thing, which is where my mother was born. My mother was born in Oxford. Her parents lived here. All of her aunts, uncles lived here.
That's Richard Holworth. He wasn't born here, but he's from just down the road. And you'd be hard-pressed to find anyone who reflects what Oxford is all about more than Richard.
Well, hard-pressed to find anyone still living, that is. There is one person who has for decades been identified with this place, and Richard grew up just across the street from that person's home. It's a person whose name you might have heard.
So he moved to Oxford in 1963 and lived in a house that was directly across the street from Faulkner's home. I never knew Faulkner. A lot of people in my family did. One of my uncles, great uncles, was his doctor. And my great aunt was very close to his wife and close to him. She had a dinner party at one point, so that she was also friends with Eudora Welty. So she had Eudora Welty come and had Faulkner come. That was where they first met. And my mother's father was a literature professor here at the university, taught for almost 60 years. And so those are kind of some of my book bones, I guess.
And that would be William Cuthbert Faulkner, the American writer from Mississippi that won the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1949. He later lived in Oxford, and Richard Holworth grew up just across the street from Faulkner's home.
And that had a profound effect on Richard Holworth. Even as a little boy, he noticed how many people flocked to that house across the street. People from all over the world.
When I was a teenager, this oldest brother of mine said, we ought to open a bookstore here one day. The idea was been planted long ago.
And since 1979, Square Books, right here in Little Oxford, Mississippi, has been on every publisher's and avid reader's list of important American bookstores.
In fact, Square Books is to authors what Texas is to country music. If you're going to make it in the business, you have to come through Oxford. Even the really famous, like John Grisham, who doesn't need the publicity, still makes time to come to Square Books.
We'd have people wind up down the street for a signing that was going to begin at 10 o'clock in the morning. They'd get here at 4 a.m. or 2 a.m. the night before, bring a blanket and sleep out on the sidewalk in order to be in line.
To get 30 seconds with John Grisham. Has the great American novel, is it yet to be written, or has it been that we just haven't labeled it? Is there such a thing?
Oh, absolutely. A great American novel appears several times a year. Now you're going to ask me to name them, but now I'm not sure that I can.
Up next, we're going to hear all about the movie Nimrods, as well as angry beavers and angry bears that are on the loose. All coming up on this roundup of weird news presented by Odyssey's Something Offbeat.
Thank you for listening to this special presentation of Weird News from Odyssey's Something Offbeat.
Do you have time to let us sit around and whine, or rather, talk about the band Green Day and the new comedy movie Nimrods, which takes viewers on this offbeat journey of a band pranked into thinking they're going to open for Green Day on New Year's Eve? Actor Kyler Kaufman joined Odyssey station KNX News in Los Angeles to discuss the project this week.
What's up, guys? I'm stoked to be here. This is
awesome.
To be doing this with you guys means a lot.
Yeah, it means a lot to us, too. I mean, man, what a thrill of a ride making this movie must have been for you.
So getting to play the green-haired bastard Fred, a dream come true. I grew up playing in, you know, garage pop punk bands growing up in small-town Oklahoma. And, you know, in small-town Oklahoma, you don't have much, but DIY music scenes, music culture, and your friends in a band make you feel like you have everything and you can take on the world. And that's what we captured in the film. It's really sick.
The guy you play and his friends can't believe that they meet, you know, the members of Green Day, and then that they get, you know, we learn fake invited to open for them. I wonder what it was like for you when you actually met them in person for the first time.
Dude, they didn't tell us that they were on set, so I just walk into this room and there they are. I'm like, holy Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Did you fanboy out a little bit?
Oh yeah, I didn't hide it. I just saw I was in character. It was the absolute best. But they were, what was so amazing about the Green Day dudes is they were equally gracious and kind because they had been watching the dailies and seeing the work that we were doing. So when they had met us as well, they were just as stoked to meet us, which is insane to say that Green Day was stoked to meet you, but I'm so thankful for that experience.
So the soundtrack's like 98% them. They produced this. Is this sort of also, you know, them before they hit it big?
What is so sick about this is, and as you know and the world knows, Green Day's catalog spans generations, and Lee Kirk, our writer and director, and the Green Day dudes did such an amazing job of, you know, diving in deep.
When you go on a road trip with somebody, you typically form a bit more of a bond than you had when you started the road trip. I mean, did you form a bond with the other two guys that you were doing this film with?
I'm so lucky. It's all there on film. Like, you will see it in the movie. Growing up playing in little garage bands, you understand that it's you and your friends versus the world. You feel like you can take on anything, even though the universe isn't giving you any signs that you can. You believe that you will, and you do. And that's what we captured in our relationship. And I'm so thankful for the cast for putting in the work. And it's just there. It's so awesome that we got to write a love letter to something that's so important to us all, and that's live music.
All right, Kyler Kaufman, he's in that movie at Nimrod, so that Green Day movie.
It's summer in the U.S., so it's a great time to get out into nature. It's a great time to get out into nature, unless, of course, your local area has been hit with a heat wave, or floods, or wildfires, or smoke, or angry beavers and angry bears. The Dana and Parks Show out of Odyssey Station KMBZ in Kansas City discussed those last two threats on the show this week. Let's listen.
A popular state park in Maryland is now partially closed after two recent attacks by rabid beavers.
Uh-oh.
The first beaver attack at Cunningham Falls State Park in Frederick County, Maryland, near some town called Thurmont, involved a 13-year-old swimmer on July 26th. The teenage boy, who had injuries to his hands and chest, was airlifted to a hospital. Following that attack, the beaver was euthanized.
He yeeted the beaver.
It tested positive for rabies the following day. Swimming access to Hunting Creek Lake at the park was closed soon afterward.
What is going on with all these angry beavers?
I don't know, Sam.
Go on.
The more recent attack took place on August 5th when a 19-year-old fisherman was bitten in the ankle by a beaver. The young man took himself to a hospital for examination. He received treatment and a tetanus shot.
As is tradition on this program, when we talk about wildlife attacking things, we like to look up how to avoid being attacked by that wildlife.
Beavers.
There is not a website dedicated to how to avoid getting attacked by an angry beaver. However, studies do suggest that the best way to get an angry beaver away from you is...
He yeeted the beaver.
Give it a yeet.
Give it an old yeet.
That's right. First, we had the two in New York. What is going on?
I don't know. Beavers typically avoid people.
Is it like they're kicking down their dams or something? I mean, typically with bears, we can point to, you know, mama bear has a cub, or they just came out of hibernating, bison, you're trying to get its attention to take a picture of it. We can usually pinpoint why something goes crazy. Obviously, the one had rabies, but angry, what? Mm-hmm. Angry beavers? That's the epidemic we're facing right now?
So I'm going to buy... either you or Dana, one of your Christmas gifts is going to be, have you seen it? They've almost made it like a Jordan going through the air in a Nike t-shirt or something.
The Buffalo Grandpa?
Grandpa flying upside down.
Yes.
And listen, I know he had his grandson with him, and God forbid if the grandson had gotten the horns.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be laughing about it.
It would be a very different story.
It would be.
But, why an old man getting thrown 10 feet in the air is not sad.
But that's my point. I mean, what is it about a 66-year-old man getting thrown through the air 11 feet up, upside down?
Oh, man.
That made me watch that video 500,000 times.
Yeah. I think we all watched it a few thousand times.
Now, if it was his, again, if it was his grandson, I would be like, oh, dang. I hope that kid's all right. And I hope grandpa's all right, too. Don't get me wrong. But there's just something funny about Gramps running away from a buffalo, and the buffalo says, oh.
Well, we need to take notes from the people who have successfully negated the angry beavers. If they do attack, you grab with two hands, and you yeet as far as you can.
And how does one yeet?
Throw aggressively.
Throw, that is yeeting?
Ideally, you have 1 foot back for leverage. You push out of the ground, sure, get the
you
energy.
You want to get in this proper stance.
A nice twist, get some torque through the core, and just let it fly, baby.
You mean by let it fly, you mean to yeet it?
That is correct.
Okay. CBS News, a bear attacked and injured a runner on a popular trail in Alaska. This is...
Now, there are some stories about how to avoid a bear attack. Let me pull one up.
Okay.
Go ahead.
The attack unfolded late last week near the Prospect Heights Trailhead in Anchorage. According to the Fish and Wildlife Department, they do not oversee the beavers. A woman was running alone on a path called the Wolverine Bowl Trail when the brown bear attacked her. She was able to deploy bear spray and escape the trailhead on her own. Taken to the hospital for treatment, officials did not disclose the extent of her injuries. Okay. And, Sam, you have advice on how to avoid a bear attack.
Particularly the brown bear, yes.
Yeah, so here's number one. Don't go where they live. That's their house.
If it's a black bear, the advice is completely different. If it's a polar bear, there is no advice. Just accept your fate,
dead.
You are lunch. Mm-hmm. If it is a brown bear, you're supposed to clap.
What
talk
about
loudly.
What about a grizzly? Is that like a polar bear, too? You have to just give up?
Well, grizzly and brown bears are... That's the same thing, isn't it?
I don't believe that's correct, but I think they're the same.
Let me double check.
I'll look it up. No, go ahead. You give the advice, and I'll look up if there's a difference between a grizzly and a brown bear. I don't know.
While in the territory where you may have a bear encounter, you are advised to make a lot of noise, clap, talk loudly, or call out, "Hey, bear!" If you are near rushing waters, corners, or in dense brush.
Do they really have that there?
It literally says, "Hey, bear," in all caps with an exclamation point.
Okay, all grizzly bears are brown bears, but not all brown bears are grizzly bears.
The old rhombus and rectangle.
The difference mostly comes down to geography and diet. Coastal brown bears live near the ocean and eat rich marine foods like salmon, making them massive, while inland grizzly bears rely on a leaner diet and are smaller.
They also say to carry bear spray, travel in groups, and we all know for any bear safety, secure your food. String it up on a line between two trees. The advice used to be lock it in your car, but we've seen that doesn't work very well sometimes, as then they break into the car. And, of course, watch for signs. And I always love when they say to look for scat.
When it comes to those angry beavers, experts cited by Maryland Matters recommended keeping human and animal family members up to date on their rabies vaccinations. They also noted that beavers are typically very shy, so seeing any beaver coming towards you is a sign of trouble. Thank you so much for listening to this Weird News Roundup presented by Odyssey's Something Offbeat podcast. This episode was written and produced by me, Lauren Berry. Special thanks to WBEN News and Talk in Buffalo, On the Road with Kelly and Bob out of KRLD 1080 in Dallas, KNX News in Los Angeles, and the Dana and Parks Show out of KMBZ in Kansas City. You can find all of these programs, including the Something Offbeat podcast, on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.